Morning.
Good morning.
So let me tell you about Unity of San Francisco. I feel like a scout who goes out, checks out other churches, comes back with a report. I'll come back. This was a really fun church. They have about 50 people. And warm, funny, friendly people who are a great audience, which means they laughed in all the right places. They hug as long as we do. I've never been in another church where the hugging goes on as long as ours does. And their minister, Ken Daigle, who is a character in himself, has declared this to be their year of abundance. I'm not sure where it came from, but they've got signs, 2017, year of abundance. Well, what is this, mid-March? And one of their longtime members just died and left them $400,000. Which is more than their annual budget, more than ours. And they're thinking about maybe moving. They're in a neighborhood called Pacific Heights. Think Highland Park in Dallas, River Oaks in Houston, but 100 years older. So gorgeous Victorian mansions. It has those hills that just plunge down to the bay. Beautiful neighborhood. And they're in this little Victorian building, 7,000 square feet that I think were on four stories. There were lots of stairs. So they had it appraised just to see if moving might be possible. $5 to $7 million if they sold it tomorrow, which they could. So maybe declaring a year of abundance is, the way to go. Not that I... Yeah. You don't have to die and you don't have to move. So, we might want to be more specific. So let's talk about the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama starts his spiritual practice every morning at 3 a.m. And he continues until 7 with a break for breakfast and news from the BBC. So he hears the same stories of injustice and suffering that we do. He may see more clearly than we do how it hurts the whole. He sees humanity as a family, all one, all alike. And he believes the answer to all our problems is compassion. Bad news is only a fraction of the human story. He would say humans are naturally sensitive and kind, and there are things we can do, individually and as a society, to bring about more compassion. So I want to talk about that this week and next, based on a book called A Force for Good, written by Daniel Goleman. These two men met in the 1980s when the Dalai Lama spoke at Amherst College, and Daniel Goleman was a science writer for the New York Times. He is also a psychologist and later became very well known as the author and inventor of emotional intelligence, or EQ. But they're friends. And it turns out the Dalai Lama is fascinated by science and psychology. So they've seen each other many times over the years, and this is one of many books that the Dalai Lama has cooperated with others in writing about his beliefs and how he sees the world. Dalai Lama is a title. It means ocean of the highest principle. For centuries, the Dalai Lamas were mysterious, unknown leaders of Tibet. They were the religious and political leaders of that country. Tibetan Buddhists believe that the same soul is reincarnated into each new Dalai Lama. So this one was 16 years old when he was installed as the 14th Dalai Lama in 1950. 9 years later, he was forced to leave Tibet when the Chinese took over. I doubt the Chinese intended to expose the whole world to the wisdom and light of this Buddhist leader. But because he couldn't live at home in Tibet, this Dalai Lama has become the best known, most accessible, most traveled Dalai Lama ever. He fills stadiums, he holds news conferences. And in all of that, he is immersed in the conditions of humanity all over the world. He speaks to different groups, but he's always addressing all of us. He isn't collecting followers, he has no tribe. He just offers his perspective on life. And he sees us as all connected. He's a futurist who ponders global situations. He's a visionary who wants to shape reality Actually, he wants us to shape it. He sees that governments are paralyzed and people are angry all over the world. So he urges a new kind of leadership, and its ongoing principle is compassion. So this is how Daniel Goleman describes it. He says, in the age of the selfie, when so many of us feel obligated to broadcast our every move and meal, these are radical positions. You are not the center of the universe, his very being seems to tell us. Relax your anxieties, drop your self-obsession, and dial down those me-first ambitions so you can think about others too. So what do we do? I mean, the Dalai Lama says we as individuals need lessons in emotional hygiene. We keep our bodies clean, why not our thoughts? He sounds a lot like unity, that changing our thoughts could change the world, that peace begins with me. But it requires self-mastery to hold that vibration or that frequency. So he advocates education of the heart, which we'll talk about next week. The Dalai Lama's had decades of practice with this, and he still feels bad when he hears bad news, but he quickly returns to equanimity. He says, if we hear disturbing news but do not have a calm and clear mind, then our initial reaction may be, oh, I must do something, this is very bad. But if at a deeper level we stay calm and lucid, then we will make a better response. It's not that he doesn't feel it, he doesn't dwell on it. In March of 2008, Tibetans did protest against the Chinese government and they were shot. Especially the monks were targeted. So here was an opportunity for emotional hygiene, and here's what the Dalai Lama did. I visualized the Chinese officials and took their anger, suspicion, and negative feelings and offered in their place my love, my compassion, and my forgiveness. It won't solve the problem necessarily, but it was an immense help in keeping my mind calm. He says, like anyone else, I too have anger in me. However, I try to recall that anger is a destructive emotion. I remind myself that scientists now say anger is bad for our health. It eats into our immune system. So anger destroys our peace of mind and our physical health. We shouldn't welcome it or think of it as natural or as a friend. So Daniel Goleman says when you spend time with the Dalai Lama, you become aware that of his emotional settings. He's attuned with empathy to those around him. He is humorous and spontaneous. If you've seen him on television, you've probably seen him giggling. He has this sense of oneness about the human family, and he's generous. And he loves it when science supports his beliefs. Because he says, of course you would expect someone who's religious to advocate compassion. Every religion says something about compassion. He wants a more universal approach. Sometimes he calls it secular. 1 billion out of 7 billion people on the planet are non-believers. But he says maybe science can convince them that compassion goes hand in hand with happiness. The Dalai Lama says he learned compassion from his mother, who was a farmer in Tibet, and that if he hadn't been recognized as the Dalai Lama, he'd be a farmer in Tibet. But he believes, and studies back this up, that we are naturally concerned about others' well-being. Children under 2 will try to comfort a crying baby. Jerome Kagan, a psychologist at Harvard, told the Dalai Lama, we have an innate bias for kindness, compassion, cooperation, love, and nurture, especially when we see others in need. The Dalai Lama thinks altruism is socialized out of us by competition that we learn, especially in school and in sports. The studies show chronic hostility shortens life. Loneliness can be a source of stress. And he says pursuing narrow self-interest is what he calls foolish selfish, and that we need an English word for self-compassion. He treats everyone the same, and he is acutely aware of the effect his position has on other people. If I go around and tell people I'm His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He says, sitting up in imitation of a pompous, puffed up person. Then I'm trapped in a prison. It creates a barrier. I'm all alone. So I always say, I'm just another human being. Then there is no barrier. The sense of being special is a form of self-deception. Yikes. He sees us working gradually toward compassion and warm-heartedness. If we can have 5 and 10 year economic plans, why not plan for compassionate action? And action is the key. He differentiates between empathy and compassion. Empathy for others is nice, but compassion wants to relieve their suffering. Empathy alone can make you feel hopeless. Psychologists call it empathy distress. It leads to burnout in medical workers and school teachers. But the Dalai Lama says if you get depressed and give up, then the pain wins. People can keep going when they feel they're making a difference, and that's compassion. He would like to see missionaries worry less about converting people to their religion and simply help them more. So what are the actions to take? How do we practice compassion in groups and countries? The Dalai Lama cites 3 main elements of compassion, and some of them might surprise you. Fairness, where everyone is treated the same. Transparency, when what's going on is open and honest. And accountability, where people do answer for their misdeeds. Compassion is not letting everyone off the hook. A good example is South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The Dalai Lama's good friend, the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, chaired the commission as apartheid ended, with full disclosure of atrocities that had occurred on both sides. Some people were granted amnesty, most were not. And part of the commission's work was reparations and rehabilitation wherever possible. The Dalai Lama says there are serious ethical lapses in politics, business, science, and religion, and it is our moral responsibility to right wrongs, to expose and reform corrupt systems. He wrote a letter to Pope Francis, praising him for telling church officials to live more simply. And he wrote a second letter to the Pope when the Pope demoted a German bishop who had spent $43 million on his private residence. The Dalai Lama said, thanks for taking a tough stand. This is muscular compassion. Moral outrage can drive positive action. It's just that when you are only angry, you have no control. He says, tolerance means you should not develop anger or hatred. But if another person does something harmful to us and we do nothing, the person may take even more advantage of us and even more negative action may come. So we must analyze the situation. If it requires some countermeasure, we can take it without anger. In fact, we'll see that the action is even more effective if it's not motivated by anger. We're much more likely to hit the target directly. He says, even if a person's actions are destructive, you can maintain concern for their well-being. But if you have the ability, you must stop the wrongdoing. He says, even as we oppose the action, have compassion toward the actor. The real meaning of forgiveness is don't develop anger toward the person, but don't accept what they've done. So, no doormat here. And that's probably the takeaway for this first part of this 2-part series. Compassion does not make you a doormat. It is not simply understanding why people do what they do. It is stopping them, if necessary, without anger. The Dalai Lama sees public corruption as extreme self-centeredness with no concern for others' well-being. And he says we're educated to think about personal success and money instead of moral principles. And religion can add to the problem. If someone tells you that people are suffering because it's God's will or their karma, the Dalai Lama says, that's wrong. The test of a compassionate society is how it treats people who have no power. whether they're powerless because of gender or class or wealth, or maybe because they're in a generation that has not yet been born, that sometime in the future, we're still all equal, and we all have rights as a human family. This isn't easy. This is Jesus-level compassion. One of the Dalai Lama's role models is Shanti Deva, who was an Indian sage in the 8th century, who said, if you don't practice compassion toward your enemy, then toward whom can you practice it? Jesus said, it's easy to love the people who love you, but love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Dalai Lama won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989 because he tried to talk to the Chinese government instead of encouraging Tibetans to fight back with violence. And you might have heard he calls the Chinese his sacred friends. The Chinese government is difficult for him to love, and he always distinguishes and says, the Chinese people are not the ones who invaded Tibet. It's the government. But he says, without the Chinese government, I would never have had to evolve my heart. Another of his role models is Gandhi, a mentor he never met. Gandhi also lived simply and tried to restrain the negative forces of human nature and develop the positive ones. Gandhi also believed nonviolence depends on the power of truth and transparency. The Dalai Lama didn't want to see a violent response to 9/11. He foresees a world with no armies and no weapons, and he believes force never resolves the underlying conflict. But he also sees violence in broader terms than just war. He says we do violence to the planet. He says a genuine concern for humanity means loving the environment. Growing up in Tibet, he says you could safely drink any water you could find. He had to move to India to understand pollution. Climate change is affecting Tibet as dramatically as the North and South Poles, with glacial melting and ice avalanches. The Dalai Lama is also fascinated with computer programs that show the environmental impact of anything that's manufactured. Have you seen those? He watched a program about a smartphone. The life cycle of a smartphone went through 131 countries with 6,175 individual processes, from mining the elements that go into the phone all the way to disposing of it and however it was disposed of. When Harvard students saw the same study, they felt the Earth would be better off without them. And so that brings us back to where we started, waking up every day to bad news about humanity. The Dalai Lama believes we hear too much of what's wrong without any balance of what can be done and what is being done. And then people tune out because they feel guilty and hopeless, when all we really need is to shift our thinking and then take action. The Dalai Lama's interest alone has sparked studies and foundations that are working to make the world better and to strengthen compassion in societies and individuals. Things really are getting better, and we can be part of it. So we will talk about that next week. But let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we become relaxed and quiet and turn within. And today we remember that what happens in the human experience on this three-dimensional planet is up to us. We're not waiting for divine rescue. That divine presence is already here, expressing through each of us. But it goes through our filters and our understanding, and so we get to decide how the divine shows up while we're on the planet. What if we could live with more compassion? What if we could love every person we met, pray for those who persecute us, and see those who are most difficult as sacred friends, our teachers? And so as we feel that divine presence in us, we feel its strength, just the power we're studying this month. Expressing our divinity does not make us doormats. It makes us strong. Strong enough to stop what we see harming other people. Strong enough to express love when it's not popular. Strong enough to refrain from angry reactions and search within for compassion. Strength without anger is our challenge and our opportunity for spiritual growth. And so as you commune with that divine presence within you, see if you can feel its strength. Strength to stand up for what you believe is right. Strength to love. In the face of anger, and strength to be the presence of God on this planet. This is the truth of who you are. You are the presence of God on earth. You are hardwired with that divine strength. And it is your nature to feel compassion and act on it. We're grateful for this awareness and for this clarity about the divine essence that dwells in each of us. And we go forth this week to express our strength as divine beings on this planet, having a human experience. And so it is. Amen. Oh.